Hello, lovely listeners. Welcome back to Nastalgia. I'm your host, Nassim, and this episode I'm calling My Super Sweet 16, Rites of Passage and Other Teenage Dreams. So last week's episode was all about middle school and junior high and my lovely experience. And so I thought, what would be more fitting than to carry on the memories into my journey into high school as a 15-year-old? And it's crazy for me to think about. I graduated high school in 2008, and my 10-year reunion was in 2018, obviously. So we're like 13 years post high school right now. So it feels like a long, long time ago. And I know that I'm probably dating myself, but hey, I'm only in my early 30s, so I'm not that old, but it feels like a long time ago. And as I was just reflecting and getting nostalgic, I was reminded of what an extravaganza your sweet 16 was, right? Especially if you're a girl, your sweet 16 was just this epic, monumental rite of passage. And then I started thinking about all these other rites of passage. And so my special guest and I are going to be talking about things like getting your driver's license, getting your first car, when you could go shopping for the first time on your own and pick out your own clothes, what it was like to get your first cell phone, all these rites of passage that becoming a teenager kind of granted you. So all of that is to come. But before I bring her on, I wanted to tell you guys a story. I wanted to do what I do best and regale a tale from my past. A-Town. The year was 2005, and Nassim was just becoming a sophomore in high school. You know, kind of coming into your own, making a name for yourself at the school that you're at. And might I remind you that 2005 was quite the year of pop culture, and especially in music. When I think back to 2005 and my high school experience, it was the year where any girl, if they weren't into rock before, they've slowly started thinking that they're into rock. And by rock, I'm doing air quotes, because what I mean by that is 2005 was the year where everyone and their mom suddenly got into Fall Out Boy, All American Rejects, The Fray, Death Cab, Plain White Tees. Like, that was the year. That was the year. There's all of these like epic singles by those bands came out in 2005. And so, yeah, when I think of that year, I specifically think of the How to Save a Life album by The Fray and All American Rejects album I loved, that It Ends Tonight was on, and Dirty Little Secret. And then, you know, I'll be honest, I was more into kind of like the indie pop rock. You know, I was not into Panic at the Disco or Nickelback or Staind, like all those like actual rock bands. But I could appreciate, you know, like here or there, like a single by Fall Out Boy. Anyways, I digress. So that was the music scene. Hopefully I've taken you back. And at this point, I am getting ready to celebrate my sweet 16, which was coming up in November. And I don't think for me, my sweet 16 was something where I was like, I'm looking forward to it my whole life. But at the time, there was a very popular reality TV show on MTV called My Super Sweet 16. Oh my gosh. And if you watched it, you know, it was all about these, you know, spoiled, rich teenage girls and their epic sweet 16s that pretty much felt like weddings. And the first episode was a Persian girl named Ava. Shout out to anyone who remembers what I'm not talking about. And I know my Persian friends listening to this know who I'm talking about. But Ava's sweet 16 was like this episode that everyone talked about. And just, we were floored. We were floored by this sweet 16. Anyways, so not to say that I by any means imagined my birthday to be like this, but in my head, I was like, hey, we're going to have a big party. It's going to be fun. And I think I might have mentioned this before in past episodes, but my family, just being Iranian and being very hospitable and loving to host, we love parties at our house. So many of my birthdays have been at our house. My sweet 16 was at my house, my 18th birthday, my 21st birthday. The list goes on there. I think I've had many a party at my house. And so my sweet 16 was like, we're doing it at our house. And I remember, you guys, specifically We're going to talk about this a little bit later with my guest, but at the time, at my high school, or maybe it was just like the year being 2005, the fashion was like designer jeans were like the thing. Like that was what you splurged on, was designer jeans. So I remember getting my first pair of 7 jeans, and I went to Mervyn's and I got this like brown spaghetti strap satin tank top with gold sequins on like the rim. Please, like that was it. And then like a pair of high heels from Baker's. Do you guys remember Baker's shoe store? Like gold metallic high heels. Like at the time, stilettos were popular. Like that you would just buy a pair of stilettos. So that was my outfit. I had stilettos, my pair of 7 jeans, my, you know, brown spaghetti strap with the gold rim. And I just felt like glam. Like I was like Fergalicious glam. Okay, so I'm like ready to party, right? And I remember my friend Almira, who has been a guest on this show, and she is to this one of my most creative friends that I have. She just made me a Nostalgia Season 2 cake that I'm sure you've seen if you've been on my Instagram. But she, on graphic design, which when we were 16, like, I don't even know how she did this. Like, was it clip art? I don't know what it was. It was so good. She made me an invite and it was like a tiki themed Sweet 16 because tiki was like so cool at the time. And I remember you guys going to Kinko's and getting these like postcard, like 4x6 postcard prints that I passed out to people, like inviting them to my Sweet 16. I have to find one of them. I have to have it somewhere. And I remember this being so epic for me because it was the first time that I was integrating 3 different groups of my friends, actually 4. So mind you, it's my sophomore year, and I mentioned this on last episode, social media was just starting to pick up. So I had not talked to my 8th grade friends, my junior high friends, in a while. So I was going to reunite with my 8th grade girls, invited them. I had my high school friends. I had my church friends because I was super close with my youth group. And then I had just my like family friends, like my Persian crew that I've grown up with. So I was going to mesh all 4 of those social bubbles together. And we just had a dance party all night long. We just danced the night away. We danced to Persian music. We danced to, of course, the epic tunes that made up 2005. Had cake, had food. I remember my mom like cooked a bunch of stuff for us, hung out on the back patio. It was epic. And of course, it would not be a 2005 Bay Area Sweet 16 without major shout outs to the Ye Area hyphy movement. All right, now is that time where we get even more nostalgic as we reminisce with my special guest. Joining me now is my friend Kalkidan, who is also a millennial and totally gets what it was like to grow up doing high school in the early 2000s and to have these rites of passage that we got to experience together. Not only that, but also both being ethnically diverse and having a unique experience in that realm as well. So Kalkidan, Kale, welcome to Nostalgia.
Woo, I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so glad you're here. You've been such an amazing like fan of this show, quote unquote. And I'm so glad to get to talk to you because I feel like every time we DM, we're like, we get each other. So it's time to have you on.
Yes. I'm excited too. I love podcasts and your podcast too. So it's my podcast guest appearance.
Yes. I'm honored. So we both are the same age. We're in our early 30s. We grew up in the 90s and then like this transition into the 2000s and like turning 16, being a freshman in high school, it definitely came with its insecurities. I think it came with its awkwardness for sure. And then also a lot of hype and excitement. So my first question for you is a doozy. When did you get your first cell phone?
My first cell phone. Okay. I believe I was 14.
Okay, me too. I think I was 14 as well. That's funny.
And my brother got it for me because I don't think my parents could like afford it. And he was like, you can't be here. Yeah, try. You got to be cool like the other kids. And I don't even remember what it was. It was like a Nokia and it was like clear. And I just thought it was so amazing, you know?
The Nokia and playing Snake, remember?
Remember most was like, I was thinking about this the other day. I'm like, you have to tell everybody, oh, like, call me after 7 or 9 because that's when, like, the 3 minutes started. Like, I have a limited amount of minutes.
I love that you remember that. I forgot about that. The whole, yeah, the notion of, like, not having unlimited data was such a thing. Like, I'm out of minutes this week, this month. We can't talk anymore.
Text messages too, kids. They used to be limited. You could have just texted all you want.
When my dad got me the unlimited text plan, I was like in heaven.
I will text all the people I want all the time.
I know. Were your parents okay with it, with your brother getting you a phone?
Yes, they're fine. Because I think they're in the boat like, okay, maybe we can't get it for you. But you know, like all the kids were getting it. So it was like, oh, it's good. And it was also like a necessity. I know it's hard for people to imagine, like, how did people get around before cell phones? It's like, well, we had pay phones. And then it's like, you know, every time you were late home, you would have to, like, especially if you didn't have money, you would have to call collect and be like, when it says, say your name, you're like, I'm late, I'll be home soon. And then just hang up the phone.
Oh my gosh. Wow. I barely remember. Wow. It's so weird. I don't remember at all. Like being in eighth grade, like all of us, like, you know, sitting around on our phones or something. That was never the reality.
Yeah. No, never.
It was like just, yeah, it was just emergencies. Like, I mean, all I could do on my phone was just text or call. I didn't have anything.
Exactly. Like,
yes. And I didn't even, I remember the transition from like my like flat, I had like a flat phone and I would use like T9 to text, obviously. And I was really fast at it. And I remember like the transition from when I got my first flip phone with a camera and how cool it was to have a camera or like a flip. Were you big on ringtones?
Yes. Oh my God. And you know, I was actually thinking about ring back tone.
I was just going to say that. Yes. Tell us what a ring back tone is.
So for those who don't know, a ring back tone is when somebody calls you, you can pick a song that expresses who you are. So while they're waiting for you to pick up the phone, they can listen to a song.
Very intentional, if I do say so myself. So instead of listening to like the ring ring, you're literally listening to a song. I remember, I want to know what yours was. I don't really actually remember even what mine was, but I remember my friend's dad, literally, imagine like a Persian dad, like an uncle who is like in his 50s. We, to this day, I remember it because we all died of laughter. His ring back tone was Me and You by Cassie. Why? And our running joke was like, why is Uncle So-and-so's ring back tone Cassie, Me and You?
That song was hot for a minute.
Well, it kind of had like an innuendo of a meaning. So weird. Well, do you remember any of yours?
I don't remember any of mine. I just remember thinking like, why is this like $1.29?
You have to pay, you guys. You have to pay for a ringtone. Yeah. I know. So
it's like whatever you picked, it had to be a good one that can express who you are for a while.
Yes. I remember there was a way to somehow record a ringtone. I remember on like my 20th or 21st birthday, I recorded the song Please Don't Go by Mike Posner. Baby, please don't go. And I literally made that my ringtone. And it was just like a vibe. And so now every time I hear this song, I think of my ringtone. Another rite of passage I want us to talk about is driving. Dun, dun, dun. Learning to drive and like getting your driver's license. Okay, so I have a story to share. So my parents will kill me for this. No, they won't. They'll think it's funny, but my parents were just so, and maybe yours were too, just being ethnic, so micromanaging with my driving situation. I think to this day, my mom thinks I'm a horrible driver, like aggressive driver. But like, I remember, so I did fail my license test twice and I wanted to talk about the trauma that came with feeling like a failure. So remember, cause like, you'd be so excited, like you're turning 16, you get your license. I remember like I took driver's ed late or something. So I wasn't able to apply for my license till I was 16 and a half. So 6 months later, and I went and it was a rainy day. It was in May and I did not know what a defroster was. And I didn't turn on my defroster during the test. So literally the entire car is like fogging up and I'm just paranoid. Like, what do I do? And I got an automatic fail because I didn't know how to.
Wow. Okay. Well, I didn't know you could fail.
Yep. So I'm guessing you passed on the first try.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But, finish your story and then
Okay. So that was the first time. The second time was like, I made like a, I don't know, like a turn that it was like a, it was another automatic fail, just like some turn situation. So anyways, once I did get my license on the third try, I think back to the moments of driving with my parents for the first few months, yeah. My mom like holding onto the side of the door, like, like just so paranoid and just like the stress of like needing to prove myself that I am a good driver. But now that I look back, I'm like, they should not be allowing kids to drive at 16.
I was terrified. So I did not get my license until I was 18. Everybody's like, oh, you can get it. I was like, no, I'm good.
I like that.
Also ties back to the cell phone, because one of the reasons I was terrified was I would get lost going everywhere. I didn't know where anything was. And we didn't have GPS in our cell phones. As we mentioned, all you did was talk, text, and snake. So I was like, I was terrified to learn how to drive. Yeah. So even I think I got my permit, and I remember I think my parents were just like, we can't teach you how to drive. I think they knew. They're like, this is not gonna go well. So they hired like a driving instructor.
Yeah.
I was such a nervous driver, and he was making me even more nervous because I think he was just like, go for it. And I was like, no, I might kill somebody. I ended up having to fire him. That's a long story.
Really?
Yes. I remember I called him and I was like, you keep yelling at me. He was like, no, I'm not. He was like, I'm just trying to motivate you. And I was like, I can't drive under these conditions. I'm only 16.
Too much. It's too much.
Yeah. So I waited until I was 18, but then I had been like practice driving for like 2 years.
Love it. That's great.
I passed it on the first try, but I was terrified of hitting somebody and being lost. So.
And so wait, how did you navigate, no pun intended, being lost? Like how did you... Okay, I'm laughing at my own jokes.
Just kept getting lost a lot.
Listeners out there, if you remember, we would have to print out directions from MapQuest. Or I remember going to like events with my parents, like their family friends' houses that were far away. My dad would have a map. He had a legit map.
Yes, exactly. In preparation for this podcast, I was talking to Jonas about this. Yeah, and he was like, why didn't you just pull out a map? I was like, and get more lost, because I'm not even good at reading maps either.
No, I still don't know how to read a map. So would you do the same where you'd go on your computer, you'd type in the directions and print MapQuest? Okay.
Yes, MapQuest everywhere.
When we say GPS, I think people think one thing on the iPhone, but what was it before that?
So for those who don't know everything.
I know.
So GPS, you had to buy a whole separate, like, I don't even know what to call it, thing.
you'd buy a it looks like a baby monitor.
Yes.
Well, yeah, it's the size of a baby monitor. It would suction to your car windshield. Yes. And you'd plug in the directions. It would basically be like a monitor that would tell you where to go with noise. I remember we had like Tom Tom. Do you remember that name? It's called a Tom Tom. It had a British accent. But yeah, no, it was like a big thing, a fatty thing that was on like suctioned on your windshield.
Exactly. And they were not cheap. Like you have to buy them when it was like
Black Friday. Yeah. I just remember this. I want to talk about listening to music when we were 16, when we started driving. I remember I had, my dad gave me his old car. It was a Mercedes-Benz, but it was like a 1994. And at this point it was what, like 2006 or something. And the car had a carousel of 6 CDs, but you could only change the CD player was in the trunk. When I even say this, I'm like, what's my life? You guys, this is how dedicated you had to be to your tunes. I would pick 6 CDs. They would be in my trunk. If I ever wanted to change one of those 6, I'd have to turn off the car, go to the trunk and change a CD. Like now that I say that, I'm like, what was my life? Like, wow.
Oh my God. That is hilarious.
And then my next car in college, it was one of those FM transmitter situations where I had an iPod at the time where I'd plug in a cord to my iPod that would connect to the radio, and you'd tune it to a certain station, always had static, always, and it would like play the song.
I mean, even when they designed that, how could they have possibly thought that was a good idea? I remember actually having like this booklet of like CDs.
Heck yeah.
What I was thinking about the CDs is like, yeah, I guess more creativity during that time, right? Like, so you got to pick your song and then burn them on a CD. For those who are burning on a CD. Yes.
That was also another mode of creativity and a rite of passage.
Yes, exactly. So you have to think about like, hey, what song do I like? What song do I want to listen to? Or yes. I like you only get like, what, 12 or 13 on a CD. So it's right. like, what do I want to rotate through while I'm driving? Because I'm probably not going to keep changing all these CDs.
Yes. Well, and even the art of like how to order them, you know, like what order do I want my 12 or 13? That was fun, man. I loved making burn CDs. I was good at it.
I mean, but even then it's like you have to use LimeWire to get your music. So yes. I guarantee what you might have on your playlist.
I know. I know. Well, and were you the same? Like for me, like there were some CDs though that I needed to buy it. Like I had to have the insert, the booklet, you know, like, and then other things I'm just like, yeah, I'm just going to make my own mix. Cause I only care about maybe one song on the album exactly. or something.
Yeah. Yeah, depending on the artist, you're like, mm-hmm. oh, this whole album is good. And you would actually like really take care of that album.
I know.
But I don't know when I started like tossing them, probably when they all just started showing up on iTunes. But
yeah, yeah.
It was like a cherished thing. And it cost you like $15. So you're like, I'm going to keep this CD.
Absolutely. Wow. Right when you said iTunes too, I just thought of like, that was also a big transition. Like to go from like, you had your own illegal music library and then iTunes comes around and like you have to like I'm trying to think because my iPod had my LimeWire songs on it, but then there was some point where like I had to start buying songs.
I think it was Apple. I feel like I don't know if they stopped allowing you to like put, like you couldn't put it on iTunes.
Yeah.
It had to be like on your computer, on your iTunes to load it onto the
yes. iPod. Wow. Yeah. Good memory. Wow.
Yeah.
That was so like, dumb.
You may get it from LimeWire and it'll be like somewhere on your desktop, but.
Right. Right.
We'll make it to your iPod.
Guys, the money that we've spent on music.
Hey, Andy.
Yes, Lisa?
You ever sit around thinking about how Ren and Stimpy is the greatest Nicktoon ever?
I mean, I sit around thinking about how Rocco is and how Ren and Stimpy isn't even top five.
Well, you're wrong, and now I challenge you to a fight to the death.
You know what? Let's mark that down as plan B. Hey, gang, check out 90s Court Podcast, where each week, Lisa and I discuss two things from the 90s that brought us great joy.
Or great cringe. We cover movies, TV, video games, music, toys, food, and so much more. Check us out on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you podcast and catch up on a great backlog of 90s goodies.
And be sure and follow us on Facebook and Twitter at 90s Court, because it's 90s Court, and that means that you, the jury, decide who wins each week.
And if this podcast thing doesn't work out, I can always just murder Andy.
Please listen.
Speaking of outlets to get creative, for those who don't know, MySpace was the predecessor to Facebook. And honestly, I liked it even more than Facebook. I think MySpace was genius. But to me, MySpace was also a rite of passage because your parents had to like allow you, right, to get on. And it became this like social media network where you, yes, you would make friends, but also like you would impress people based on your profile, right? Like yeah. You'd pick music, you'd pick default photos, you'd pick your top eight friends. To display. Oh, yeah. Tell us about that, the drama.
Okay, first I'd like to say this makes me sad that we're not even that old and everything we're talking about, we're like, for those who don't know.
I know. And I hope that I'm just being like extra cautious in saying that. Maybe everyone does know, but no, you never know.
Yeah, some of these kids don't.
No.
Somebody who's 20 right now probably had no idea.
I know. I should check what my analytics are. Like, what is my age demographic? But
I used to love it because I used to love building the profiles.
Yes.
And then nobody told me this, but I was like low-key computer programming because it was
yes.
like HTML. So like
you would literally be able to customize your theme. And I mean, yeah, it was lightweight coding.
Yes, exactly. And then, yeah, I remember my brothers or my friends would be like, oh, can you build it for me? I was really good at it. It was really like an outlet for creativity and mm-hmm. like self-expression. And then I was thinking, like how quickly we get messages now.
Yeah.
You know, on MySpace, you would send a message and you would actually have to like wait days or whatever.
Yes. Wow, good memory. It was like an email. It was literally yeah. sending an email to someone's inbox. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and there was something so like blissful about getting a comment, like yeah. getting a comment on your wall. And Facebook is kind of the same, but no one really comments that much anymore. But there was like, I'd always get so excited to log on and be like, three new comments. Or
yeah, exactly. Because it didn't happen all the time.
No.
Yeah. You sent the message. You're just like, oh, did they message me back? We'll see. But man, MySpace was so great.
I know. Did you ever have top eight drama?
Yes. So I used to build a lot of my friends' profiles and I'd be like, oh, who do you want on your top eight? And I felt like they felt obligated to say yes. me because I was building it. But I was like, it's okay. I know you're going to change it when I like, if you're tech savvy enough to change it at least.
I know.
I remember like one of my best friends, I was like, oh, who's going to be her top one? Is it me or her boyfriend?
Exactly, dude. I know, for me too. I remember, especially with like my, at that point in high school, like it was so like cool to have a good guy best friend that you're just best friends with. But I'd always be like, why am I not number like two? You know, after your best guy friend, I should be next. Like, why not? And there was always drama over, like even with your girlfriends. Yeah, like who's ranked? I mean, you were essentially putting your ranking system of friends on blast for the world to see. Yeah. It was very toxic.
Yes.
It was cool too, because it was kind of like, not a dating profile, but sort of, because you could put your favorite, like I remember having my favorite movies on there, favorite quotes, right? Like pictures of actresses. Yeah. Favorite
books, all that stuff. Yeah. It was like, it's kind of crazy. Actually, you're right. If somebody has never been on it, it's so different from like today's social media. I guess the closest thing I could think of is like Instagram, but even that is just, it's just photos.
I think actually, yeah, now that I'm like really processing it, I'm like, I think it's kind of like a dating profile, but just for your friends. Kale, I want to talk about fashion now. And when I say rite of passage with fashion, I mean, I think that you and I can both relate, because 90s fashion was one thing as we were growing up, but I feel like there was a rite of passage when like your parents allowed you to finally shop at Abercrombie & Fitch or Hollister. Or when you, at least for me, I don't know if it was this like this for you, I actually didn't really love dressing super preppy. I think I was a little bit more of like, I just went down like a little bit of a ghetto fab vibe. And I was really, I was more into, like go to like Mervyn's and buy like a really ribbed wife beater tank top with like my Adidas, you know, like that I would lace in like that. How do you even explain the lacing? I don't know how to explain it. Like it wasn't crisscross. It was just like, do you know what I'm talking about? Like it was just like puffed up.
So I felt like in high school, most things, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's probably the same now. It's about like status and being cool. And Abercrombie & Fitch, actually, I don't know. I haven't been to that store in like years now. So I don't know, but it was super expensive.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day. So it was like, and Hollister, I just remember Hollister, Abercrombie & Fitch, Uggs.
Uggs. And, Uggs with a denim miniskirt.
Yes. And what's called those juicy?
The velour tracksuit. Oh my God. I never even wanted one that said like juicy and rhinestones on your butt. Like why would a 15-year-old girl be wearing that?
I know. And then, on the other side, like you said, I feel like the more hip hop kind of look, there was like Air Force Ones.
Yes.
And Apple Bottom Jeans, or Beyonce had a brand called like Derriere at one point, Fat Farm. But I felt like all these things was just like a status thing to be like, I can afford this, you know?
Totally.
And
totally.
Like, it's like, would you rather have like 4 or 5 shirts or have one of these Abercrombie jackets?
One polo with the Abercrombie mousse on it for like $64.
Yeah. Which I felt like my parents were just like, why would you just get this one jacket that you could wear when you can have all these other things?
Yeah.
So more like, being young, I guess. But yeah, back in the day, it was just like, man, I want that so that everybody knows, like, at least I can afford it, you know, and I want to look cool. And then also, I think, I think you talked about this in a previous episode, but like, you know, like music videos were like a thing.
Yes.
Right? Like they were a thing when we were growing up. And it was like whatever the artists were wearing at the time, whatever they were promoting. And like, you like really wanted to keep up with that because that was cool.
Absolutely. I think even to your point, like not only did it show the kind of like financial status in a way, back then in high school, where you shopped was so telling of like your kind of like your clique in high school. What I mean by that is like I knew there was a crowd of like skaters that were at Zoomies. Always the goths, Hot Topic. The people who were preppy, it was Abercrombie. The people who kind of couldn't afford it were in the middle, like maybe me, American Eagle. That was my vibe, or Old Navy, like, you know, and then of course, Forever 21 kind of was always in the mix. Dude, do you remember Forever 21?
Wow. Yes.
I went to like a really preppy school and like jeans were such a thing. I don't know if you remember this, like just designer jeans were like the thing at my school. So like I'd ask my parents for my birthday, buy me one thing, buy me a pair of Sevens or Citizens or Rockin' Republic jeans.
True religions.
Yes. Also kind of like transition to Urban Outfitters became a huge thing. And I loved Urban Outfitters so much. And I kind of transitioned to that like boho look. And I thought it was so cool.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, I think fashion kind of evolved too from like 9th grade to like 12th grade. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like in 9th grade, it was more like, oh, I want to dress like the preppy people. And then I feel like it's the more you know who you are, I guess. I actually never really went to the mall and shopped by myself.
Wow, really?
When I was in high school, yeah, I'm trying to think. I would say maybe towards like senior year, but all the time, like, yeah, I would go with my parents and they would like be giving their opinions.
I remember that was kind of like the only thing to do, it felt like, when I had my license and I was a sophomore. But yeah, going to the mall or like going to the movies with your friends, I was like, on a Sunday after church, like we'd all like, let's drive to Valley Fair for lunch, you know, and like walk around.
His shop, yeah. And I think that came with their protectiveness too. I don't know how it was for you, right? Like I'm Ethiopian, and my parents were just like, okay, first of all, no sleepovers. Even when I was in high school, they were like, no. I remember I was in high school and I asked if I could sleep downstairs at my friend's house, and they were like, no. I was like, I could just run back up. And I'm also like 16, like it'll be fine. And they're like, no. And I think they just felt like they had to protect me here because it's just so different from our culture in Ethiopia. Like kids play outside in the yard. And I mean, you don't really have to worry that somebody's going to, okay, this is getting kind of dark, but like somebody's going to kidnap them or take them.
Totally.
Like, and even like raising a kid, it's like a village thing. Like, you know, like your neighbor to tell you what to do, and you need to respect them like they are your mom or your dad.
And that's
kind of understood. And here I think they just felt like you don't even talk to your neighbors, let alone tell them like, hey, my kids are outside, can you wash them for
me?
So I think that's why it was kind of cultural too. So they would always just go to the mall with me. Wherever I need to go, they're like, we'll drop you off. And it's like, I have a party. They're like, all right, we'll pick you up at midnight.
Yep. You're not sleeping over there. Yes. Well, and so to that, did you feel kind of a tension within yourself? Like, here I am, you know, Ethiopian, and you really value your culture, and that's been you and your DNA, but then you're in America, and like, it's a whole different culture in middle school, high school.
Yeah. I felt like, let me see. Because I think when I think about my Ethiopian culture, there's parts that I love about it and there's parts that I didn't like about it. And I think that like being ethnic wasn't really like a cool thing, right?
Yeah.
I don't know about like Persian food, but like Ethiopian food like really smells when you cook it. So it's always
and Persian food like looks weird too.
So it's like you're always the kid that smelled like onions in class because every Ethiopian dish is made with onions. It was like, okay, I'm Ethiopian, but it wasn't like, oh, I'm proud and it's cool and I love it. And then I think I also have a tension within myself because I came here when I was like 10 and I just never felt I was never Ethiopian enough for the Ethiopians and never American enough for the Americans.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's just something that I feel like I've been just working through as I've gotten older and being like, okay, well, this is just my culture. Like, this is just who I am and it may not fit perfectly into both cultures. And it's just something I have to accept. But I definitely hear you that there is a thing that I think it was like, you should assimilate, you know?
Totally. And, I know.
I think fashion choices. I just remember like going back to when I came here when I was 10 years old. Yeah. My clothes were just so odd and so different.
Yeah.
You're like, I want to make my life as easy as possible. I don't want to be picked on. Like being African wasn't cool. So it was just like, let me just wear that and do this so that I
fit in. Yeah. I feel the same as you were talking. I'm just thinking of like, I'm trying to think of the moment where being ethnic became quote unquote cool.
Yeah.
Because I remember nobody really cared, like in a cool way, that I was Persian in middle school or even high school. It was almost like we just didn't talk about it. / maybe I even felt some shame. Like, man, I'm so embarrassed. Like I remember feeling so like ashamed that my grandpa from Iran would come pick me up from after school care. Like when I was in junior high, like I had, like, didn't want him to talk to anyone because, you know, when he's signing me out of extended supervision, like, is he going to have an accent when he talks? Or, you know, of course he does have an accent. You know, are they going to think it's like he can't speak English well, or he's old and Persian? And like, why? I was just so ashamed. But then, yeah, something happened. I wish I remembered the exact moment, but like in my early 20s, just meeting more people, even I remember like at my first job out of college, like people thought it was so cool. You know, people I meet now, most of my coworkers even now are like, you know, can we try Persian food? I remember like our staff like asked for our Christmas party last year to have it be catered Persian food. And I was like, so honored, like, you know, like, wait, what, why? And they genuinely care and they want to know. Or, you know, like Persian New Year was just a few weeks ago and like my friends said Happy Nowruz and they know about it and they care. And like, do you know what I mean?
Yes. No, I hear you. And you know what, the funny thing is that you bring that up, I was actually really heavily connecting it to food. I feel like that is the point where it became cool. It's like somewhere in college people thought like, oh, it's a good thing to try different like cultural foods. And I feel like that kind of opened the gate to the culture. Oh, let's go try Thai food, or let's go try, get Ethiopian food or Persian food.
Yeah. It's like when they got in their heads, like, okay, now I'm going to be open-minded and try to, and like be a foodie, quote unquote. Yeah. Now I'm open to it.
Exactly.
I guess what I'm trying to say is like, I think it means so much to me. And I hope that like my white friends or even non-Persian friends know that like it matters so much to me when people care to take an interest in your culture, right? Like even when you texted me the other day, like wanting to try a Persian restaurant. Well, Kale, it's always a pleasure to talk to you and to just reminisce on all the things. And I'm so glad that even in a sea of people where they might not all know what we're talking about, we do. And it was so good to talk about our past together. And I'm just so thankful you came on. So thank you for sharing with me in these memories.
Thank you so much for having me on. I love your podcast and I love you. So
I love you too. And you know, before you go, what is like a hope you have for the current or future generation, or just something you'd kind of want to impart as you leave?
You know, I think just try to care less about what people think of you. I don't know. I know that sounds like, oh, well, yeah. You shouldn't care what people think. I mean, you should care to a certain extent, because I feel like we can all benefit from self-reflection, or when someone tells us like, oh, this isn't good. But man, I just remember my childhood and my teenage years. I think I just cared so much what people thought or what kids thought. And when I think about those times, I'm like, man, what a time wasted, you know, because you could just be living life and enjoying yourself. And now I know that's amplified even more. Like, I mean, if MySpace was a place for you to show who you are, right? Like now people think because of what you tweet, it's like who you are. And even on Instagram, it's like, oh, this is what I stand for, what I post for. Yeah, like live your life, you know?
Preach. Yes. It's almost like instead of the one social media outlet, now we have 12 to worry about and think of. You're right. Exactly. Yeah.
It's like now it's like who follows you? That's like the new top 8, right?
Exactly. Wow.
Man, especially for young girls, I'm just like, this does not define you, you know? And yeah, just care a little less. Because I think it's unrealistic to say like, don't care at all, because we're just humans. But like, as you grow older, care a little less what people think of you.
Perfect. Perfectly stated. Wise words. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Of course. Guys, you heard it here first. Care a little bit less. That is my hope as you leave today, wherever you are listening to this. Care a little bit less and be yourself. Thanks for tuning into Nostalgia. See you next week. Don't sound-